You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I love coming here. You know why? Because I never know what I'm going to see when I get here. I love all the tables with all the stuff out. I love the tall tables, and I feel like I should go get drink orders. And I love being greeted by people that have seen me and know who I am and appreciate that I can do this, because I appreciate that I can do this. David is one of the dearest friends I have, probably the worst communicator of all my friends. I send him texts, and I don't hear from him for months. So it's like, but when we get together, we can't stop talking, and we have so much to share and remember together that when he asked me to do this, I was thrilled to death. So I'm really grateful to be here today with you. So get comfortable. This is maybe a few minutes longer than some of his might be, but not very long. Okay. Today, the teacher in me is going to step in so that I can share some observations and practices using things that I have worked out to help me live in this world today. Our reading is from Luke chapter 5, and you'll see it comes from, and I may not say this right, Douay Rheims, 1899, American edition of the Bible. When I was pastor, I loved going and looking at the old Bible versions because sometimes I heard they pull it more directly from real scripture from the Greek and all the other different languages that they got a literal translation from, and so I picked this one on purpose.
Our words of wisdom are selections from Luke 5, verses 15 through 17.
But the fame of him went abroad the more, and great multitudes came together to hear and to be healed by him of their infirmities. And he retired into the desert and prayed.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Now we know Jesus went into the desert frequently, and at least once he ventured out for 40 days and 40 nights to have his faith tested by the evil one, right? And that's a great story, and we've all heard it hundreds of times, but that's not what we're going to go with that today. With this passage, I'm more interested in Jesus' need to just get out, to get away from the worthy but hard work that he did day in and day out, surrounded by throngs of people all wanting a piece of him. I picture this man who's absolutely dedicated to his work, but who also can't seem to get a grip on the magnitude of what he's set off. On purpose or by accident, he created a movement, and it was very real. It had to feel overwhelming for him at times. Just think how it must have been for him to merely walk into a town that's already been primed for his visit. Yes, he had the disciples with him to help with the crowd control a bit, but they weren't armed or a threat to anyone. They were his friends who supported his mission as they understood it. They were essentially spectators too, learning with each adventure what that mission was trying to accomplish. And that was largely to bring the people from worshiping many Roman gods back to following the one all-loving God of Moses. He was the rabbi, the teacher, telling stories about how God works, demonstrating huge forgiveness and acceptance of others, bringing comfort to people with health and emotional challenges. The expectations of the people that they brought to him must have weighed heavily on him. And his resulting kindness, patience, and focus on their needs had to wear him down with each day he and his friends were on the road. Let's not forget the presence also of local leaders, distrusting him and watching his every move. Talk about pressure. I think it's important that we recognize that not much of this was in Jesus' control. He had to deal with what came at him, one event at a time. And I believe that Jesus knew something about self-care. Because when he felt overloaded, what did he do? He took off for the desert with some serious downtime so he could pray. The desert for him was an easy escape because it was right there, a walk away into brush and rocks and silence. He probably walked quickly at first, but once he got out of view of the crowds, I hope that he slowed his pace and took some deep breaths like we did this morning to get a whiff of creosote after a sprinkle of rain. Or maybe he stopped to look at a bloom on a cactus or look at the lizards and the little bugs in his path. Rock formations might have got his attention, and a piece of white quartz would pop into view and shine just like a diamond in the dirt. I'd like to think, as he took in all the natural wonder of the desert at his feet, he'd offer some prayerful thoughts of thanks to God, adding to what surely must have preoccupied his mind. Jesus was living a 24/7 life of service. And to take even a short walk would have helped prepare him for all he was called to do. We can safely assume that Jesus, for him, the desert was a place of peace and connection to God. And I bet some healing on his heart happened as well. He couldn't control the crowds, but he could control how he found his peace and renewal. So fast forward about 300 years, and it seems that the desert was also a place of escape for the real world, from the real world, for another group of God followers. After hundreds of years in which Jesus' people were persecuted and murdered for living their version of a godly life, Constantine declared Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire. Churches were built. Rules and requirements for living were created. And a hierarchy of church leadership roles came into being. They got organized. The focus of this new religion wasn't to embrace living as Jesus lived, but to control the people to keep the peace of Rome at any cost, and also to keep the coffers of church leaders full. The days of communal home gatherings and baptisms in the river were pretty much over. The Roman Catholic Church had evolved. So many from the Jesus movement cooperated because it might have been they were afraid and they wanted to survive no matter what, or maybe some of them actually liked the changes. But for a small number of renegades, these changes in faith structure didn't resonate. So they took control of their own lives by leaving it and having a new order to create. Men and women who rejected the official power and misused practices of the Roman Church fled to the wide open spaces in local deserts to live a more simple, focused life of faith, following instead the traditions of Jesus and the disciples. They were desert abbas and amas, desert fathers and mothers, and they lived on their own, or created small communities among the boulders and caves out in the deserts of Egypt, Palestine, Persia, and Arabia. They focused on prayer, singing the Psalms, living together cooperatively, and working simply. They were challenged by many of the usual real-life events living in community. But overall, the focus of their lifestyle was to inspire others to live the same way, the Jesus way. For these remote dwellers, the hot, dry, possibly foreboding desert became a safe place where they could have more control of what happened to them and freely follow their beliefs about how people of faith should and could live. Well, it's not much of a stretch to put ourselves in the shoes of those desert folk with regard to the society we live in right now. And its impact on all parts of our lives, we may be looking all around ourselves and say, how can we live like Jesus in our world right now? The culture of our time certainly is creating an almost unlivable situation for too many creatures on this earth on too many levels. And we're being asked daily to act on things happening to and around us. We have to be ready to discern what's true, what's false, what's worthy or useless, who's honest or lying, and how much will gas, eggs, or surgery cost this time. We are bombarded by sketchy political dealings, killings in schools and peaceful gatherings, and warlike attacks on innocent people. We worry about the well-being of our earth and all of its inhabitants, human and not human, our resources or lack thereof, and the threat of nuclear war. Then there's the technology influence on our lives, addiction in its many forms, and man, I could go on, but I'll stop there. I don't want you to get depressed. It's an endless list, and I'm fairly sure many of you are feeling just as overwhelmed by all of this, just like Jesus felt with the crowds of his day. I know I do. I have a sense that these realities are our modern-day version of the clamoring crowd driving Jesus to the desert. Anytime, on any day, we may realize we have little or no control over what's happening. And because of this, we may feel the need to just get out. Well, you have a great environment around here where anyone could take a little ride and go take a walk in the desert. Lucky you. And I have the forest in Prescott. Lucky me. But the desert Abbas and Amas might recommend that we consider another approach for facing these difficult challenges of our lives by taking time to create a desert within, where we can have some control over a piece of our lives, a mental and spiritual place that we can go to anytime we need it, to remove ourselves from the pushing and shoving of all of those negatives that we face every day. So that's the setup. This is where the teacher Jane comes in now. And I'm going to try to give you some practical things to think about. Please know that the things that I want to share are suggestions, and there are probably other techniques that you could implement or do implement yourself in your particular situation that would create the same sense of peace. Odds are you already have some type of self-care practice that works for you. And some of this may be old news. Wherever you are in your own spiritual care, I hope you find something here that'll help you create your unique internal desert that you can access whenever you need to be reminded of God's love and presence in your life. And just because I'm a teacher, there's a handout for this. And there's a couple of copies back there for you, and Denise has an electronic version because there are links that will be live if you get the electronic version from her and have her send it to you, because there are places you might want to explore that I use all the time. So I shared a resource with you, but I had to tell you. Okay, so a little background on why this all started with me, because this is my practice now. The year 2019 wasn't a very good year for anybody, right? What was happening then?
COVID.
And it was scary and ugly. And it just so happens in my life, I was also going through the end of a 22-year marriage to the person that I loved more than anybody in the world. It was an ending I did not choose. As I lived through this event and COVID, I tried to find my way through some intense grief, and I realized that I needed to simplify my life in many ways because I was overwhelmed with all the emotional stuff I was trying to carry. So I implemented simplifying things financially, socially, and even spiritually. Hiring wise friends and some decent counseling helped me bring my sense of life and the world back. And many of the methods I use today came out of that rough time, so that'll give you a hint. I took control of what I could control. And to this day, I'm grateful for the Holy One's intervention in helping me find hope for a better life ahead and what works for me to live each day. So here are some general practices that I use. And these are the parts that relate to being in the outside world. Keep doing what good work you do. Volunteer and stay with it. And if you haven't spent much time volunteering, try to find something you can give your time to. Helping others is totally a Jesus thing. And it makes you feel good when you're done. And I'm going to use the you now because I'm going to suggest these to you. Cut back on social media. Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. Try to limit how much time you spend there, if at all. You'll be surprised at how little you miss. I almost never look at Facebook anymore. At the time when all this happened in my life, because I live in a small town and I was a performer, a lot of my life was pretty public and it got on Facebook more than I was comfortable with. So I went, well, I don't need Facebook. And I really don't. So I strongly recommend backing off on that time that you spend. Then check out alternative news venues. I like BBC News. I like NPR News. I like The Guardian. Those are the three that I typically look at when I go to news sites. I think they're a little more objective, and I get information that I wouldn't get otherwise. And when I do read the news, and I would suggest you do this, try just reading the headlines and then doing a quick skim of articles that you think are important enough for you to get some information. The goal here is to get enough and be informed enough to not let it overtake you. I have friends that are on the television all the time watching every single thing that happens, and they are so stressed. And you don't want to be dumb about it. You want to know. But skim, and then leave it. And so I do. Those three places, I take the morning and just go boom, 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 and leave them. There's not much we can do to change what is happening every single day. It doesn't seem useful to get trapped in the circle of news to me. And the best part is surround yourself with people you love and who love you as much as possible. And try to limit and avoid political discussions, and agree to disagree. I had to learn this the hard way because my siblings, a brother and a sister, are about as opposite of me on all levels as I can get. And so the conversations have to be about general things. My sister and I have lunch together every week, so this does work. It's hard sometimes, for me especially, because it's like, but we aren't making judgment. We are just cohabiting with people that don't agree with us. And we need to do that because Jesus did it. And then the last one is the hardest one for a lot of people, but I got to tell you, I sleep really good at night because I turn off my phone from 9 to 6. I have 3 emergency numbers that can cut through that. So if something bad is happening, then they can get through and that's when I need to hear them. But I don't get 1 o'clock in the morning texts anymore. And sleep is a big deal. As old as we can get, and I'm at 72 now, so, you know, I need that good night's sleep, and this was a wonderful game changer for me. So those are how to deal with the outside world, and I just want to take a little bit of time to tell you about what I do as my private practice. And I want to remind you that you don't have to devote hours to this. Do it when it works for you in your schedule. So I'm a morning person, and I get up and get my coffee, My fake coffee. Decaf. Not the same, but, you know, it's better than nothing. And get my coffee, and I go to a specific place that I've set up in my home that's a special chair that I do my prayerful time. And it allows me to look out this beautiful window I have at the sun coming up, at the birds flying back and forth to their water space, and at the wind blowing the trees. It is so peaceful. But I didn't always have that, but I made it myself in a special spot in my home, wherever I was. And make it work on your time schedule. Don't let this be a thing to stress you out either. So keep that in mind, because some days I could be there for an hour very easily, and some days I'm on the road fast, and it's a 10-minute, okay, God, here's what I want you to think about. Okay, God, I love you. I know you love me. Take care of us all. Okay, bye. And then I go get in and do, and that's okay, because God isn't keeping track of how long we mess around in connection with God. It can be as long or as short as it has to be for the time, because our lives are complicated, and I think God understands. So here's what I do. After I get my coffee, I sit in my special chair, and I'm quiet, a couple of deep breaths, and then I start with gratitudes and give thanks for what I have and the many blessings that are still out there that sometimes we forget to be grateful for. And then I read some scripture, or, and on that sheet I have some books that I really love that go in a rotation. So there are some prayer books that are written by other people. There are meditation books. The Dalai Lama's even in that pile, because sometimes you got to get somebody else's voice. And so I take a little time to do something that's a spiritual word thing on paper. And then I stop. And I name the people that I know and love who need some extra care and what their cares are. That may be the longest one right now. I have a lot of friends who have spouses who are passing, and there's a lot of stuff happening. And after I've given those names to God, then I look at the challenges and the troubles that are in my own personal life. And I list them and ask for help or strength or hope or just patience to deal with it all. Then I go to the world, because there's a lot more out there, and that list can be really, really long. So some days I just say, you know, holy friend, what's going on. I trust that you're in charge and you've got this, so have at it. Have a great day. Do what you can. Help people be smarter than they seem to be. You know, you got this. And then I sit in silence for a while. And sometimes that's the best time, because I've said everything I need to say, and I'm a talker, can you tell? But being quiet in the presence of the Holy One brings so much peace. And even if it's just a couple minutes, it's really good. So I recommend that you do that. And then the last thing I do is thank the Holy One for being in me and with me and through me and for me. And then I ask to be whatever God needs me to be that day. And I leave it open-ended, because it reveals itself in the craziest ways. I have to share this with you, because I was not prepared for this yesterday. I was like ready to come here. I had everything ready. And I left my clothes in Prescott. I had a really cool top, very colorful, cool top, and some black pants that aren't joggers. And as soon as I got to the hotel and I opened the back door of my back seat, I went, oh no, the little thing with all those clothes are in the house in Prescott. So I had to go shopping last night to find something that I thought I could stand to put on. That didn't make me, and I'm so glad to see you in shorts, and because I'm even in my sandals, for goodness sake. I mean, this is not what I would normally wear to be the pretend pastor for the day. But you guys are all so understanding. I really appreciate it. But what was the lesson in that? And I try to ask myself, okay, I get it. You're giving me lessons. And it was slow down. Don't worry about stuff. Be okay. Is this really important? A little, but I'll wear it again, so I didn't waste any money. Target and Beal. I got what I need, enough to get me by, and it was okay. Lessons are everywhere. And my desert stays with me. And so, as part of my life, even if I spend time on the computer looking at websites, you'll see I gave you resources that have positive stuff that's happening in the world that you might want to check out. Because there is good stuff still happening, and that's what we need to remind ourselves. So that's my little private desert. And anything that I've mentioned here can be mixed or matched however you want, or not at all. Because you get to decide what your desert is like. That's how you can control your own hope and the feelings you have when things feel just too big to handle. And so I pray for you that you might take something from this and create a little private desert for yourself. And let me come back and see you again. It's nice to be with you. God bless you all, and may you all have peace. Amen. Thank you, but you don't need to clap.
Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a copy.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.